Hey there, ho there. You're listening to Super Tool Shed, the only podcast on the internet where the hosts can barely contain their hate boners for each other. I'm Ben of the Sage, I'm joined by Mark the Engineer, and a very, very special guest for this episode, the one and only Bill Rogers! Oh. Yay! You may know him from Pokemon. And today's show is the first of the year. And with the new year comes a slew of new movies down the pipeline. Being the judgmental assholes that we are, we've decided to single a few out that we've been looking forward to, and a few we already hate. But before that, the pleasantries. Mark, Bill, how have you been?
Guest goes first, called it.
Ooh, I feel a little buttered up here. He told me that I'm a very, very, very special guest, but not short bus special, just special, special.
Oh, I'm sorry, did we get H. John Benjamin instead of Bill Rogers? What the hell's up with your voice?
Yes, yes! I'm in a room full of cats and cigarette smoke!
That's how the pros do it.
Yes.
Hey, Tony J used to smoke in the booth.
Yes.
Yeah.
We all know how Tony J sounded.
Not like that.
Sorry. Oh, wow. So much for buttering me up. Ooh, Bill, that was brilliant. You sounded wonderful. You sounded just like Tony J. It was wonderful.
So, you two were at a convention somewhere out in no man's land. What was that like?
KotoriCon was in Sewell, New Jersey. And we had fun. We got to do the voice acting audition workshop, which was kind of a blast. And we got to do a live reading of Sandman comic and an old Flash Gordon radio show. So that was
that was stolen from Kyle Aber.
Yes, Kyle Aber. You know, I noticed that Tom like thanked Kyle in the beginning of his panel. I stole this.
Oh, what's Sandman comic, if you don't mind me asking?
No clue.
It was, three Septembers and a July or something like that? I don't know the exact title. It was something like that.
I don't know, because Sandman passed me by, and now I'm just like, well, when I have enough money for absolutes, I'll buy them. But it was fun, and the whole con was fun. I mean, it was kind of like a day and a half sort of con, so it was so much crammed into a small space, but... Yeah, it was a good time, and I would definitely do it again. It's my second year at KotoriCon, so I really don't have any complaints. First tool shed of the year, so a lot's gone on. Something starts with B. and we're not going to talk about it. It's not going to happen.
I think we've already talked about it to death. I mean, the episode has been released. It's behind us, and there is a new year ahead of us, and that means a new year of Anime Abandoned. And right off the bat, I've been scripting, like, I just finished scripting a February episode, and I am just beside myself with how much this film fucking sucks! Oh my god, it sucks so hard! I can't...
It's that you're running into the same problem that you did with Fist of the North Star, where it was, so, Mark, guess how many pages I'm in? I don't know. 9? Guess how far I'm into this movie? Halfway? Not even.
the script wound up being 12 pages long. The film is 75 minutes. My review of the film is literally half the length of the film. It's like a Red Letter Media up in this bitch.
Well, I'm sure that's going to make for a really long and semi-boring-ass read-through from time to time. But that's okay, because that's how we make sure to tune Anime Abandoned for quality.
Quality. Bringing it out of the vacuum. And later tonight, after the show, maybe Bill can sit in if he has time.
For a script read-through.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, just, you know, expand the vacuum, as it were. So make sure that it's not funny to just the both of us.
Ah, yes. Stop telling dick and fart jokes. You know that doesn't sell.
But that's how we make our money!
Nobody wants to hear dick and fart jokes, especially on the internet.
Yes, only the most Epicurean sense of humor will be allowed on the internet.
Oh, you know, speaking of Epicurean sense of humor, I think that it should bear stating the thing about the knighthood, about the actual like knight joke. What would it mean for this show if we could get a knight to destroy Owen Citizen? Which, to frame this, because Bill is out of the loop. Mm-hmm. The person who gives new media an air of sophistication is a guy named Kyle Colgren, who is a friend of the show.
Oh. Okay.
And he just makes it look like no matter how hard we try, we're just doing dick and fart jokes all the time. However, there is this weird alternate universe sort of like one in a million shot that quite maybe, and I mean like the slimmest razor thin maybe, that we could get a knight to destroy, to like verbally destroy Kyle. And because when Bennett said that when Bennett kind of set this up, this scenario, I said, I would sell everything I own. I would give up all of my worldly possessions. I would sell my car. I would sell my girlfriend, to which Bennett then, you would sell your girlfriend cheap into slavery. My mother, I would seriously consent to being a wandering tramp, if only so that the last thing that I saw before I lost everything I owned was this official knight, Sir. What, like
Mix-a-Lot?
Sir David McVicker.
You can look him up. He has his own wiki. Dude's serious.
He was knighted for his services to opera, no less than opera, good sir.
So that's as serious as it fucking gets around here. And I would give up all of my worldly possessions to see this man sit in front of Bennett's camera, just to read this ridiculous fucking dialogue where he's just like, "To Kyle Owen Citizen Colgren. Neener, neener, you're a wiener." You know, like, P.S., you don't know shit about Nietzsche. You know, like, I would give anything for that.
And, and in closing, Kyle, the Swagman Colgren, has farty pants.
Because we get cameos, and I love all of our cameos. Thank you, Bill.
Aww.
But after we get a knight on the show, it's just going to be like, I'm sorry, let me look through the book here. Bill Rogers, it doesn't say Sir Bill Rogers. I'm really sorry. Jim Cummings, it doesn't say Sir Jim Cummings. Frank Welker, the fuck have you done?
You've just angered.
Let's see. No, I'm sorry. I'm not seeing a Mignana here in this roster.
Sorry, we're just going to have to ask you to jog on because your name isn't Sir Mignana, so.
Be gone, Mignon.
That's like the single most epic sort of cameo that we could ever get. I think that should be like what we should all try for from now on, that we as new media people
get a knight on your show.
Just get a knight on your show. Like it can be as non sequitur as you fucking want, so long as they say yes.
And I don't know how we would film this because I want the atmosphere to be just right. I don't want him to be just in any old chair. I want like the biggest, most plush leather chair you could possibly find.
Wingback chair. It has to be a wingback chair.
Like a wingback chair. And it's set in front of like this literally wall of like dusty tomes of like the kind of book that you could fend off a robber with, you know? Just like, those kind of books.
And a smoking jacket and a drinks globe.
Yes.
Would he have a pipe?
Of course. Doesn't even smoke. Just chewing on the pipe so you can get that noise that always happens in Sherlock Holmes films that they add in post. That is the loudest pipe I've ever heard.
I think he just broke a tooth.
Oh my god. This is what we've been doing while we've been off air, people. You've been wondering why we haven't had Tool Shed yet, why there hasn't been an episode of Anime Abandoned yet, because we are just having these terrible hypothetical scenarios.
We have, like, no chance in, like, maybe a shot in the dark of it actually happening, but over the break, Christmas happened, of course. Everyone knows that, you know, just in case you didn't know.
Wait, what?
But, yeah, every Christmas, I go down south to my family's home in Arizona. But the thing was, the month was about to end, and I still had two scripts to write. So I had to bring my laptop down and spend a lot of my Christmas vacation just kind of glued to my laptop screen, just typing away. And my cousin, who, like, all my cousins are very, very much older than me. And, like, my oldest cousin already has two kids, and his oldest one's about 9. And he comes up to me as I'm typing on my computer. He's like, what are you doing? He's like, I'm writing a review of a video. What's the video? You know, why don't you ask your dad about that?
Whoops. Although you could tell the kiddies at home about your dad's redneck adventure.
Ah, God. So my uncle... All right, my uncle, the night before they went out, asked everyone, like, hey, why don't we go out off-roading out in the Arizona desert? For those of you who live around the area, it's around the Superstition Mountains. And I asked, oh, well, that's always nice, because I like going off-roading with my uncle. He has this Toyota Land Cruiser. And it's jacked up, so, like, there's this huge amount of wheel space. I mean, you could literally park a Nissan Micro underneath it and still have room to spare.
Like, you could cram so many babies into these wheel wells. It's insane. An entire maternity ward's worth of babies between all four wheel wells.
Exactly. So, and he said, yeah, we'll go out in there to the Superstition Mountains. And he said, but we'll have to wake up early. It's like, well, how early is that? It's like, yeah, 8 a.m. It's like, good luck out there. And I spent the previous night just working away, just toiling at some scripts. And that was another, you know, like, toiling away on these scripts for these episodes in January was a sit, let me tell you. But I woke up the next morning. My father and my uncle went out and went off-roading. And then they said they wouldn't come back. They would be back before dinner. Dinner came. They were nowhere to be found. Right as we had dinner, when my aunt got a call from my uncle, who managed to get into cell phone range, what happened was his car had tipped while going up a very steep incline, and it literally just kind of did one of these barrel rolls where it just kind of landed on its roof. The car is totaled. Like, when I saw it the next day, it was just gone. And, oh, God. And part of it was very sad because my uncle had that car for as long as I can remember. And we went on, like, so many trips in that car. We went fishing. We went up to Sedona for the scenery. And
see, he called it camping, but really he was burying the bodies.
I'll have you know that they're a good Catholic family, okay? Cut them a break.
There have been good Catholic serial killers, I'm sure.
He was rolling a barrel of money through the desert. He left his khakis behind. We love you, Bryan Cranston, wherever you are.
It doesn't help that my last name is also White.
Yes. And as we established on a previous episode, polishing his awards and counting his money. That's where Cranston is now.
Oh, back to the story. So it took them when they finally got back to the house. We had kind of prodded him for questions. It was like, well, what happened? And he told us about the tipping story. It's like, well, why didn't you call us sooner? It's like, I was out in the middle of the frickin' desert. Of course, he didn't say frickin', but again, good Catholic family. But the thing about it was they tipped it, and there were some other, like, off-roaders around the area, and it took three different cars, three different wenches, to get it back onto its wheels and then roll it back onto the main freeway because AAA doesn't have an off-road ATV unit. So, like, you had to get it back to the main highway in order to get also within cell phone range. So it took about 5 hours from about lunchtime around 1 to about 6 or 7. It took that long to get from where they were back onto their wheels and back onto the highway. And it took another 2 hours for my aunt to basically come find them and bring her back. It was, oh, God, I've never seen my uncle so drained. Because my uncle's a, you know, fairly aged man, but he was always spry and very, you know, like laughing heartily. He has one of those
commercial for Eastern Mountain Sport ever. It's like, and now from EMS, a $69.99 GPS unit. No matter where you get lost, EMS is there.
Well, the issue wasn't being lost. It was the fact that they couldn't leave the car where they were. They had to get the car back onto the highway, but it wasn't like they were lost. It was just that they were so far out into the wilderness that the quickest way was to get the car back onto its wheels and then roll it back onto the highway where they had to stay with the car. In any case, he was always like this really hearty laugh kind of guy, but then to see him just kind of like have his head in his hands and he was just like, what a day. You know,
Merry
like his
Christmas,
favorite car.
Bennett. You know what I gave you this Christmas? Give it back. I still got the receipt. I've got a premium to pay now.
That car was uninsured.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I had that same kind of response as you did. It's like, you've been driving around this Toyota Land Cruiser without insurance? He's like, no one would insure it. It's like, why? He's like, I go off-roading in it.
Wow.
So, you know, so that car is gone. There ain't no coming back from it. It's not like it's his only car or anything like that. I mean, he has like a sensible little Golf GTI whenever he's going out for...
You put that much money into lifting a truck. Yeah, that's like, well, there's your investment gone. Most stockbrokers would have just thrown themselves out of their offices by now.
Well, to be fair to my uncle, he's had this car, like I said, for as long as I can remember. So he's had it for over 20 years. I mean, I think the money that he spent on it, you know, he's not going to miss it.
I would. I sure as shit would.
Says the man who spent the last 5 years of his life rebuilding his old car.
Two years.
Oh, okay.
Two years. It's not sad yet. It's not sad yet. I'm not married yet, so I can't claim that my wife is leaving me because I won't get rid of the car. That's it hasn't happened yet.
Yes. He's gonna be huffing car fumes in the garage one day and be, save me, Knight Rider, save me.
Oh my God.
The car is talking to me. No, it's really not. No, really, it is.
Really, it is. And David Hasselhoff is borrowing my garage to sleep in. And it turns out he's not lying. It's just David Hasselhoff got lost and he's drunk and he just needed a place to stay for the night.
Oh, man, he's not going to eat a cheeseburger off the floor of the garage, is he?
Oh, it's dirty. Ew. Do you have a Christmas story, Bill?
No, I had a very low-key Christmas. I'm sorry. I'm not fun.
You had a low-key Christmas, and I guess Sands of Anime was pretty low-key, too.
That was after Christmas. I spent Christmas with a barrel of eggnog and a loaded shotgun. But
I can picture you just, like, trying to angle the shotgun and just pull the trigger with your toes.
Oh, what's the point? I might as well keep living.
It's like, no, I hate myself and I want to continue suffering.
That'll show me. That'll show my life for not working out. I'm just going to stay the course.
I mean, that's what I think there's a sort of a fallacy to like people who like, if you really hated yourself, wouldn't you want to continue living? It's like, yeah, that'll show me, like you said.
Oh, I was like, that's right, kids. Show you really hate those criminals. Abolish the death penalty. This message brought to you by Super Tool Shit.
Because the sweet release of death shall be denied to those without parole. Prison rape for everyone.
Oh,
I mean, have you been in prison? It's literally hell on earth. Why would you want these murderers to escape that? No siree, Bob. That's why we like to put a shiv somewhere in the prison, just so that they can have them be on their toes at all times.
Oh my God.
A life lived in fear is a life well lived for a murderer.
That's when we get to the really like terrible dystopian future where we have the game shows featuring prisoners. One of these prisoners has C4 shoved right up their asshole, connected to a detonator that's connected to a cell phone, and I have the number, but you don't know who it is.
I have to get out of here. I have C4 up my ass.
Keep running. For a while there, I thought you were going to take that into a different direction. It was like, I hid in a bomb up some prisoner's ass. Who wants to have this first shot at the prison rape?
Oh, my God.
And all you got to do is just look for the guy who looks like he's walking on roller skates. Okay, it's that guy. Don't rape him.
Yeah, but what if it's a gay prisoner?
Well, it wouldn't hurt. It wouldn't work anyway because, again, you're looking for the guy who's walking around with a bomb up his ass.
But what I'm saying is, like, what if it's, like, the gay prisoner who just got into prison for, like, having a hamster up his ass and got nailed for animal cruelty?
So you're basically saying something like Christopher Maloney from Oz?
Yeah, somebody who would, like, you could cram, like a quarter pound of C4 right up his ass and just nothing, just no change in the gait at all.
How did we get here?
Because you didn't have a Christmas story.
Want me to talk about Sands of Anime? That's nothing God. Like prison rape.
that's a rich endorsement.
Like, this message is brought to you by Sands of Anime. We're nothing like prison rape.
I swear, like, fucking that dude would, like, be putting a pipe cleaner in a coffee can.
Oh, my God. All right, so, movies.
Why don't we talk about some movies that we've already designated as being as equal to or worse than prison rape. 2014 is shaping up to be, I want to use a generous term here and say an interesting going to be an interesting year for movies. For one, the fucking Hobbit trilogy is going to end.
Oh, thank God.
I didn't even know it was supposed to be a trilogy.
Yeah, I know.
I thought it was supposed to be two movies until I saw the first one. They were like, three.
Oh, God.
Man, that's all that is. It's all over again. Right. And then another 10 years from now, it'll be D&D, the trilogy. Like, great. So are we going to get Justin Whalen again?
No. But, oh, God, what... Actor with blue lips.
Bruce Payne.
Yeah, Bruce Payne. I mean, I do not want another Dungeons & Dragons movie if I'm not going to get Bruce Payne. I mean, that guy is just...
Have you ever seen the Dungeons & Dragons live-action movie?
Like, is that the one with Thora Birch and Jeremy Irons?
Yep.
Yeah.
So long ago that I don't remember it. I think I, like... hit myself in the head with a ball-peen hammer afterwards. the memory would escape me.
And Marlon Wayans.
Yes.
Marlon Wayans.
He was the black mage, right?
Yeah. And Justin Whalen, who you may know from his extensive roles as Jimmy Olsen on Superman. And that's it.
What a guy.
Thora Birch and her tits from American Beauty were in that movie. That was nice. Whatever happened to Thora Birch?
Wait a minute. Thora Birch was the daughter. You're thinking of the other one, aren't you? No, wait.
Thora Birch, you know, went, bared it all in American Beauty. Not all, but she went, topless in American Beauty.
No, I thought that was the other one.
No, they both did.
They both went topless in that? I gotta go rent American Beauty again.
You know, like, I remember that scene where, like, she's looking at her neighbor and, like, the neighbor that really... Okay, I love American Beauty, except for that character. I just wanted to punch that character and give him a swinging DDT right into the fucking concrete. I hated that guy. It's like, you want to see the most beautiful thing in the world? It's just like that video of the plastic bag in the wind. Oh, there's so much beauty. It's like, you You are the reason why hipsters exist.
Yes, and then he's like, yes, keep hitting me. I'm the best piece of ass in three counties.
So, wait a minute. He was a pretentious filmmaker? Wasn't that the director? Oh, too soon?
A little.
No, I don't think so. I think we're beyond the point when we can all say that it was brilliant, and now we can look back on it and say, wow, that was kind of twaddle.
I want to go back and look at it, because I was kind of mixed. Like, I had too many people telling me that it was the greatest movie of all time, so when I saw it, I was like, that's all right. And I didn't think it was terrible, but I didn't think it was brilliant, and that's... So, like, I'd like to look back at it now and be like, well, now that I'm, like, can't really remember everything that happened in the movie. Let's, you know, I know Spacey freaks out in it a lot, but
everything old is new again.
I forgot what the actress's name was. Some like Anne
Bancroft.
No, it wasn't Anne Bancroft. Bennett? Dude.
Annette Bening.
Yeah, Annette Bening in that movie was just.
Are we supposed to be talking about new movies?
Yeah, I know, but like...
So American Beauty 2014.
Yeah. This was the remake of American Beauty.
We figured it was out long enough that we could reboot it. Nobody would remember. These kids today will watch anything.
I just blame myself for mentioning Dungeons & Dragons now.
Well, no. You have to understand, you know, her tits. Thora Birch's tits can derail any kind of conversation.
Then they must be destroyed.
Wow.
They cannot be destroyed. You hold a knife to them and you see them and you're like, how can I be stay angry at you?
Oh my god. Kite, live action movie.
Yes, let's move on, please.
Okay, all right. Something that is very much deserving of our hate. So the trailer for Kite has been released. And first of all, the thing that immediately jumps out at me is like, Kite? Of all the anime to adapt into a live action... why this one?
Because it has the Samuel Jackson seal of approval.
I would suspect Afro Samurai before Kite. Because at least, you know, Afro Samurai is a little bit more, I want to say, contemporaneous. I mean, like, honestly, even like, all right, only like a certain sect of otaku know or have seen Kite. It's not like it's Evangelion. It's not like it's fucking Dragon Ball Z.
But in a... I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. Go.
No, it's all right. So there's this cult anime that, like, okay, like, some high-profile people in Hollywood know Kite and love it for some reason. I really think it's overrated. It has its moments, but it's really kind of up its own butt. So you have all these Hollywood players know about this movie, and they want to do something with it. Okay, so, all right, why didn't you make this movie, like, 8 years ago?
My thought is that I think it's a situation where they can be like, it's an anime that we made into a movie. If you make Evangelion into a movie, everybody puts it under the microscope. If you make, if you were to make Dragon Ball the movie, oh, wait a minute.
They did.
Everybody will put it under a microscope. If you do something like that with a big title that everybody knows, people are going to be like, no, that's not right. Everything's wrong. Oh, my God. The way they his hair color is wrong. What are you doing? He's wearing the wrong jacket. But if you do something like Kite, people are like, I vaguely remember Kite. And then, like, in the trailer, the thing I saw, I'm not even sure if I saw the trailer. I saw something that was like the 7-minute clip show thing with Samuel Jackson going, hey, guys, I hope you like Kite.
Yeah, that's what we saw.
And there's
I saw more of the footage. That there's other clips released online. Like, they're really trying so hard to sell this movie. Like, you can literally watch the entire film online already. So much footage of the movie has been released.
And that's the thing. Like, I saw Kite when it first came out so long ago that I'm watching it going, I guess this is what happened. Oh, wait, the bathroom scene where she's beating the shit out of people. I remember that. And then that's what people are going to be like. Because I don't really think there are going to be a lot of discerning otaku out there going, oh, wait a minute, they didn't do that in the OVA.
See, but the problem is that I am. Because it's not
you
like
loved Kite?
Well, as when I was in the demographic, yeah, I did love Kite. Because it was just hyper-violent B-movie schlocky bullshit committed to anime. So at the time, for me, it was good enough. And then, you know, as you get older, you kind of realize, like, wow, this is really juvenile.
And then he watched the unrated version. It was the first time he saw animated boobies.
No, like that's where you first saw animated penetration. If they actually had full-on penetration in that movie, that would be, oh my god, that would be the only way I would ever adapt it, just because I want to prove how insane I am. It's like, Hollywood needs an enema. Let's have full-on penetration.
So one of the clips that they show is the bathroom scene, and it's a shot-for-shot remake of the bathroom scene, but then I was watching it with Bennett on the phone, and my thing was, okay, so they do the vomit, the gratuitous amounts of vomit when she's, like, punching dudes in the temples. And I'm like, okay, well, I can respect the fact that they're shooting this shot-for-shot, but then that cold reality sets in where you go, what about the window? Out the window, and the screaming, and the and then like big huge dude like falls, and like he breaks her fall, and then the truck falls through the street. And when you look at the effects of this movie and how cheap they are, you kind of go, either that's going to look like a 1990s PlayStation game, or they just didn't do it. Because they have not shown that part of the bathroom scene yet, because really it's a big nut scene, you know, like if they did it, they don't want to show anybody that scene until it hits the theater.
Yeah. You got to save something.
One of the most ridiculous scenes in anime history, by the way, because it's just the length of destruction it causes, like a body falling onto a car that somehow collapses the freeway into the subway and explodes.
Which I'm challenging the audience right now. There's got to be somebody that can run these numbers for me. Okay, so Sawa is Japanese, so we'll say that she's like 5'5", 5'6", maybe. Roughly, we'll say 90 pounds. The dude she was fighting, very clearly, probably about 6'4", 6'5", 350 pounds. What is the terminal velocity of those two combined weights falling out of a window that was, how many stories do you figure that building was?
A long way up. It was a long way up. But that's not, well, okay, getting into it, trying to avoid a discussion of physics here because, you know.
No, I'm not saying that I want to discuss the physics. I'm saying that I want somebody else to run those
do
numbers.
The math for you.
I want to know what the terminal velocity was of a, like, we'll hard set the dude at 350 pounds of solid muscle at 6'4", and Sawa at about 90 pounds. So we'll say that that's, what, 440 pounds. So 440 pounds falling from just pick a height. Because this scene goes on for a while. What is the terminal velocity of those of that mass object, and how much force does that create hitting an oil tanker? And would that force be enough to break the ground and then force the oil tanker and the dude and the girl to fall through the concrete? Oh my god.
Yeah, there is so much going on in that scene that there is no, like, on that kind of budget. I mean, if you looked at the first scene in the trailer, you would notice, like, the hole that the bullet punches through his hand looks photoshopped. It doesn't even look.
Oh, all of their effects suck.
All of the effects suck. So,
like, the blood splatter, blood splatter sucks. Their explosions suck. The way that everything's composed is really pretty, although I really don't think that they could hit you any harder with, look at how bleak the world is, but Sawa is the only flower growing in it. It's like, oh my god.
God. And why is her name Sawa if she's not Japanese?
Seriously!
Well, it was Sawa in the original, and they wanted to keep the name, but didn't they get, like, the girl from Paramore to be in the movie or something? I don't know.
She does look like the girl from Paramore, right. But yeah.
And like they kept like all the names, so it's Sawa and Obri, and Obri's very white too, and just like, look, I know that we all want to collect paychecks as meat popsicles, but this is just wrong on all levels. Like, because I will stand behind Speed Racer. Like, I like that movie. I will stand behind Blood the Last Vampire. I liked that movie. But this is just all levels of wrong.
So you're already, I think we're all in agreement that this is probably going to be the, probably one of the worst films of the year.
I don't think it stands a chance just because I don't think anybody's going to care. I mean, like I said, I was never really a big fan of Kite. I am a few years older than you boys, so when it came out, I was just like, yeah, okay. And
well, why don't you age yourself? Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
What happened in your day, Bill?
No. I'm just saying, like, it just, Kite didn't mean anything to me, and I think that Uematsu is a very interesting character designer and animation director, but it seems like, I don't know, once he started to get into his own, it was like, hey, how many movies can I make where there's then a version of it that, like, has, like, just rape scenes and horrible unrated versions?
Is that the natural progression of all directors, you think?
To what, include, like, director's cuts where there's rape scenes and ultra-violence? I mean, I'm...
like, when they get out of doing the studio film, that they just start to go crazy? Or maybe that's just, like, the natural progression of all creatives in general. Like, you work for the studio for a while, and the studio drives you crazy.
Well, no, I will tell you that Uematsu was always kind of weird. His designs, because he did, like, that Gatchaman OVA thing in the 90s. And let's go even beyond that. You guys are eventually going to have to, if you're going to continue to look at things that are attached to Macross, look at Megazone 2-3. Because that was the first part was what was made into Robotech the movie. And that movie was Mikimoto did the character designs, and I forgot who directed it, but that was the movie that the first part was what was made into Robotech the movie in America. But the second, because Megazone was three OVAs that were three different directors, Uematsu directed that second piece. And after seeing this, like, hey, it's like Minmay is an idol singer in this dystopian future, and you're all on a ship, and we got the transforming motorcycle, and we're going to have fights in space, and there's, you know, all this stuff going on. And the second one becomes this, like, movie where the character designs are now Uematsu instead of Mikimoto. So you have, like, you go from Minmay to, like, Sawa. It's a very jarring visual. But then on top of that, I saw the second part very early in my tenure as an anime fan, and I hadn't seen things like Fist of the North Star and Apocalypse Zero and all these things that, like, are really horribly violent. But there is a sequence at the beginning of Megazone 2-3 Part 2 where a ship gets attacked by this, like, robot monster or whatever, and, like, these mechanical tentacles are, like, ripping people in half, and, like, somebody's like, quick, and they put their hand on a control panel, and, like, the tentacle just, like, tears it, and the fingers go flailing all over the place, and a guy's like, ah, and he, like, gets a tentacle through his head, and his eyes burst out, and I'm like, this is nothing like the first part of Megazone 2-3. This guy's really fucked up. And then in the And if you look at Megazone 2-3 Part 1 by ways of... Because these were early OVAs, these things. These were the original video market in Japan. I'm sorry, am I going off too far on a tangent?
No. Go.
Because in the original Megazone 2-3, there is this scene where the two main characters are like, I love you. And they have this soft focus, like, you know, no sex kind of scene.
The Vaseline sex.
Yeah, and it's all just kind of like, it's all like, you see the girl writhing and there's no guy next to her, and it's just like these, you know, soft focus moments. In the second movie, it's like, I'm gonna do you doggy style. And there's this scene that looks like it could have come at a Kite, and you're like, what the fuck is going on here? So Uematsu has always been a little bizarre. He's like, I'm gonna put sex and ultra violence into everything I can do, wherever I can squeeze it in. So he's been doing it back when he was part of the studio system.
I think we've just found another theme month.
Yay!
When Macross is long over.
Uematsu's strange journey through anime. Take a ride with us, shall you?
Oh my god.
I'm sorry, I geeked out.
Don't worry about it. You're in the right place to geek out.
Well, you guys were talking about Kite, and then you challenged me. What was it like in your day? Well, he was around back then.
So I think we're all in agreement that this is probably going to be
a bad idea.
A very bad idea that they're going ahead anyway. So moving on from that, that disaster to another disaster. And I don't know what your feelings are on this, gentleman, but The Amazing Spider-Man 2.
Well, there you go. That's definitely Mark's response. Either that or he just trying to start up his car again. I don't know.
We weren't doing this podcast when The Amazing Spider-Man 1 came out, right? Like, I never leveled, like, okay, here's the short lifespan of, like, here's a TLDR version. I got into a fight with Kaiser Neko about The Amazing Spider-Man, because before it came out, he was just kind of like, because he was he was kind of coming from the movie perspective of, like, he was more of a Sam Raimi Spider-Man fan. And, His whole thing is like, why would he have mechanical web shooters? There's no point in him having mechanical web shooters. And I'm sitting here going, Scott, honey, baby, sweetheart, you know I love you. Spider-Man originally had mechanical web shooters. And it's like, but mechanical web shooters are, okay, like, barring that, mechanical web shooters are stupid technology. There's no way that could possibly happen. I'm like, Scott, it's the miniaturization of an existing technology. Web shooters are just fire extinguishers. That's it. And web cartridges are the web fluid, which, I mean, could be any adhesive under pressure put through a nozzle. That's not stupid. So he kind of levied his distaste for the idea of The Amazing Spider-Man 2. And when it finally came out, he was happy with it, and I wasn't. Because I wasn't happy with spider parkour. I wasn't happy with the fact that Spider-Man wasn't quipping like Spider-Man. He was quipping like Deadpool. He wouldn't shut the fuck up. I wasn't happy with the crane scene. I wasn't happy with Dennis Leary. I just was not... I wasn't happy... The general thing that I wasn't happy with about The Amazing Spider-Man was... The point of Spider-Man is that it's an unlikely hero who has greatness thrust upon him, and he carries that weight throughout his life, even though we've already well established through great pundits like Linkara that the fact is that Peter Parker's a fucking asshole, because if he really cares about his family, he'd give up the goddamn suit. The Amazing Spider-Man was not about a kid who had greatness thrust upon him and he had to carry the weight of that power. It's that the entire fucking world is just set up to make Peter Parker Spider-Man. His parents were experimenting on stuff, and the webbing comes from Oscorp. He didn't invent it himself. And just a million little things where it's like, wow, the entire world is pretty much set up to make this one kid a superhero for no goddamn reason. The Amazing Spider-Man 2...
I looked at the trailer and I'm thinking to myself, what is this movie supposed to be about?
The middle child. Just because you notice that there's no levity in the trailer, that they're trying to be semi-epic. Like, not as epic as a trilogy conclusion, but they're just trying to be like, and now the stakes are higher. Spider-Man has established himself to New York, and that's important. But you know what's more important? The fact that fucking the Shocker comes out, and he's gonna fuck shit up in Times Square. It's like, oh, shit.
And that, like, in that scene where it looks like he's fighting Electro in Tron.
Oh yeah, universe. It's Electro, not the Shocker.
Although I would think you give something totally different.
No,
when Spider-Man gets the Shocker, it's not a pretty sight.
You know what? You know what? I would have preferred the Shocker if only because of the fact that the Shocker kind of became a badass in recent years. Like, he used to be like downtrodden and nobody took him seriously, but then he kind of got like dark and serious. Mm-hmm. And at the very least, you can't really inject this sad sack fucking storyline of like, oh, he's tragically a monster, and because you know what it's gonna fucking be. It's gonna it's it's going to be exactly like fucking J. August Richards' character in Agents of fucking S.H.I.E.L.D., where it's can't pay his fucking bills, so he gets experimented on or some bullshit, and they give him powers, and then the powers drive him nuts. He's like, you made me a monster, and it's not fair, but now I can get everything I want to support my child, who would be here for no other reason than to make me a sad sack character. So...
You mean the Sandman?
Huh?
We've already done this.
You're right. It, like the
well, no, the Sandman was just unfortunately in the wrong place at the wrong time. He didn't sell his body to science. He just walked somewhere where they were like, you know,
Fuck around with sand.
Let's fuck around with nukes and sand and make sure that you put signs everywhere, but in this highly volatile testing area, let's make sure that the only thing that we have protecting it is a chain link fence.
No, lol, don't go behind that chain link fence.
You might get powers. All right. Okay, go in there. But just remember what it was like to be human, okay?
No. It's like that scene out of Archer where fucking Cheryl's like, oh my god, I said that was going to happen. It actually happened. Maybe I have psychokinetic powers. Well, just make sure to use them for good. No.
But like the Amazing Spider-Man 2 ultimately comes down, like my feelings about it comes down to this. Why the fuck is Paul Giamatti there? Why is he here?
Well, they kind of covered this in the Ultimate Spider-Man because in the TV show where the Rhino isn't the Rhino necessarily, it's that the Rhino is more of a suit, but not a suit in the traditional Rhino sense of the suit. Like the suit is just like a big ass suit and a small guy in it.
Well, that's not my point here. It's like okay, I could get behind that versus like the fucking really, really, really ridiculous looking.
Well, if you had to sell, I mean, think about it from a creative perspective. If you had to sell a really sad sack, miserable, mopey looking guy who gets the power to be like 50% the Juggernaut, wouldn't you cast Paul Giamatti? I mean, really? I mean, because really, it's almost like they just keep saying we need someone who looks like Jay Sherman.
I cannot tell you how much money I would pay to have Jay Sherman fight Spider-Man. No, not John Lovitz. Not John Lovitz. Just Jay Sherman. Like an animated Jay Sherman in a live action Spider-Man movie.
Just all the Spider-Man's quips immediately diffused by cynical sarcasm.
Not listening.
Not listening.
Wow.
You do like a Who Framed Roger Rabbit thing where you just kind of draw him into the frame. Get on that, Hollywood.
I'm
sure John Lovitz needs the work.
and on top of all of these things, The Amazing Spider-Man 2 is managing to try and do the same thing that Spider-Man 3 did, which is, let's have three villain threads going on at the same time. It's like, you know, I don't think you guys can multitask like that, even if you try and be smart about it and make one thing a force of nature. So then you only have technically two villains and then this force of nature that's, you know, painting the background red. So, because it's Chris Cooper is in it now.
Going back to American Beauty,
Chris Cooper is
American Hatred.
He's Norman Osborn.
Oh, okay.
Which is fucking weird.
Well, you guys do know that they're doing all this because they want to crescendo this into a Sinister Six movie.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which like,
they got to get out as many villains as they can so that they can do this.
Well, the problem is that they telegraphed the shit out of it because they built the lizard on like genetic engineering, which is funded by Oscorp conveniently, and they never show Norman Osborn, but they give you this distinct impression that like Norman is sick and dying and in a hospital bed somewhere in a sealed room. Mm-hmm. So then, like they kind of hammered that home in the first movie where it's like, okay, so let me guess. Norman is dying of cancer and he's trying to find a solution that'll prolong his life or cure him because it's terminal and inoperable. So he's going to use genetic engineering and is, like, using all the tendrils of Oscorp to make this happen. And then that eventually becomes the Super Soldier Serum that we can't call the Super Soldier Serum because we can't make any references to Captain America, so we'll just call it the Goblin Serum. And then that's what eventually makes the Goblin.
And not to mention, like, that... Like, the scene that pissed me off the most was that, like, that panning shot where you could see, like, oh, look, there's Doc Ock's arms. Yeah. Oh, look, there's ex-villain thing here.
Look, you can say whatever the fuck you want about Sam Raimi Spider-Man movies. Like, no, they don't fucking age well. But when he used Samocam for Doc Ock's tentacles
in
the surgery scene, that was fucking amazing. They'll never be able to take that away ever. The fucking, like, the close-ups of the eyes darting around and just the camera being at the end of the tentacles. And then when the doctor looks to the side and there's a chainsaw right there and he, like, picks it up and he's like, ah! And then he tries to cut the tentacle. Like, you'll never be able to take that away from Sam Raimi. He made the single best Doc Ock scene there will ever be, ever.
And Spider-Man 2, I was actually taken aback by how badly that movie aged. Because I remember seeing it in the theaters, like, wow, this is really great. Cut to me 4 years later watching it on DVD. And I was like, wow, this was not as great as I remember it.
No, because every shot where everything is moving just looks like a video game.
Yeah, well, just beyond that, I don't know what it was about the movies, but you just kind of overlooked the hokiness of the dialogue and the kind, like, everything about those films felt like a comic book, but not like a good comic book, like one of those 60s back of a cereal box kind of comic. like the Sunday newspaper comic. That's what it felt like. It felt like the Spider-Man you would read in the Sunday newspaper.
Where Doc Ock gets thwarted by Twinkies.
Oh no, these Twinkies are gumming up my arms.
I was thinking more like, I'll get you, Spider-Man. Here, Doc, have a Twinkie. Ooh, I can't resist Twinkies. Take them away, boys.
Yeah. It's like, hey, Doc Ock, eat a Snickers. Why? Because you're not you when you're hungry. Better. Better.
Yeah, but what does he turn into then?
You have to
think about who he turns into.
Wouldn't he just turn into Alfred Molina?
I guess so. Alfred, you should eat a Snickers. Well, no, because it always has to be like some wild juxtaposition. So, like Betty White to something else or... Mm-hmm. Like something, so you have to take some time and think about, like, okay, well, who would Doc Ock actually be after he had a Snickers? I think he would be Mike Pollock.
The world needs to be a peaceful place.
Another movie I wanted to bring up that we all know is going to suck. And I think we're just going to bash our heads in, like, we're just bashing our heads trying to figure out why they keep making these movies. Well, we know from a fiscal standpoint why they do it, but Transformers Age of Extinction.
Not talking about it.
You're not talking about it?
Not talking about it.
Not till they can wrestle the franchise out of Michael Bay's hands.
Are you kidding me? He doesn't want anything to do with those movies.
Yeah, I know. I can't figure out why Hollywood keeps making him do them. It's like even the director doesn't like the film. You know, there's a problem.
I know. That's what blows my mind about this film series. It's like, he doesn't want to do them. So, like, they keep writing him these ridiculous checks for him to just, like, okay, fine, I'll do it. Jesus.
See, the funny thing is that, you know, first two movies, he was all right. Third movie, he didn't really want to do it. And you could tell from all of his, like, interviews and everything else. But then you look at the third movie and go, you know, technically this is the most Transformers-like of all the Transformers movies?
Except for that line.
Which one? The needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few?
No, the kill them all.
Oh, yeah. When fucking Prime shows up and he's like, we will kill them all. What?
You have to wonder if that session in the studio, Peter was like, I'm pretty sure Prime wouldn't say this.
Really? Like, we will kill them all. Like, wait, what? What's going on? What are you putting on the screen? None of the effects are done. Well, you're going to be taking your big axe and you're going to be cleaving Decepticons in half, sentient beings, you know, the thing that they have a right to peace. Being in pieces is the right of all sentient beings.
Yeah, that's very good. But does that sell tickets, Peter? No. Now go back to the booth and be a psychopath.
Well, at least make it so that I have that virus from the original series where we turn all red and start fighting each other.
Or he's just asking, like, is this that alternate universe convoy where I'm like, where Prime is a Decepticon? Where he was always a Decepticon and Megatron was a good guy?
No, but he'd have a goatee. Alternate universe Prime would have a goatee.
Oh my god. Dude, like, Transformers 3, like, I didn't see it in theaters. I had to see it on Netflix, and when I did, I went, I should have seen this in theaters. I felt bad, because it's like, he actually finally made a Transformers movie where there were high stakes, and the fights, you could actually figure out what was going on, and the story made sense, and Wiki took kind of a back seat, mostly.
Not enough, let's be fair.
Not enough, but Wiki still took a fucking back seat.
And Megan Fox wasn't in it, so that
Megan
was a plus.
Megan Fox wasn't in it, and that was a plus. So, and it all kind of came down, like, actually, I thought that Shia LaBeouf, like, all the lines that he got were genuinely fucking good. When, like, he has to go to the secret base in the beginning of the movie, and they won't let him in, and then, like, Bumblebee has to like pretty much show up, transform, and he's like, "Yeah, that's my car." I was like, "Okay, yeah, it's funny." Like, it was genuinely funny when it was supposed to be funny. So I thought, like, that's strange that the movie he didn't want to make was actually the best of the three. So maybe that's it. Maybe it's that, you know, he's like sitting there in the chair with the stain, making decisions that he thinks are terrible, trying to tank the movie. Except that's the opposite of how the universe actually works. So when Michael Bay thinks he has a good idea, he makes Pearl Harbor. When he has bad ideas, he makes The Rock.
So, are you basically saying that Michael Bay is his own Bizarro Michael Bay?
Yes! That's it. That Bizarro, that he's the Michael Bay of a Bizarro universe. Me am Tank Transformers movie. Add Sentinel Prime.
Movie break box office records! What did Michael Bay do?
Me am good director.
Me am like lens flare. Okay, I think we're gonna, you know, bring this down a little notch, and I actually wanted to take this time to not really expound all this energy on negativity.
Let's think back on the movies that died in 2013. Go to like a montage of In Memoriam.
I was like, basically, we'd just be talking about 47 Ronin for 2 hours, wouldn't we? So, yeah, did you know that Keanu Reeves made a movie? No? No, neither did America. But like, a lot of the 2013 flops, for me, kind of boils down to, like, I saw very few movies in 2013 in theaters. Like, I saw Iron Man 3 in theaters. I saw...
Not bad.
Well, okay, my feelings on Iron Man 3 have been pretty much the same after I've given it some thought. It's like, that movie didn't need to be made. And if you go back to all the Iron Man movies, much like Spider-Man, they get worse with every watching
of it.
Well,
it didn't take long for Iron Man 1 to look bad. It just took, like, and now Blu-ray wins the war. Get Iron Man on Blu-ray. Iron Man looks like an action figure in HD.
Yeah, let's, no. And I was actually talking about this with my, friend Gabe, and one of the biggest problems with Marvel movies, to me at least, is they are very uncomfortable with showing the hero in the costume for very long. I mean, at this point, no one goes to see an Iron Man movie for Iron Man.
No.
And they kind of established that.
RDJ.
They go for Robert Downey Jr. being Robert Downey Jr. And you know what? That's fine. And I think the ending made sense in that regard, saying, well, if you guys don't want to see him fighting, you know, the Mandarin in his Iron Man suit, why don't we just have Robert Downey Jr. be Tony Stark and just give everyone support so you can hear him be all like, yeah, should be drunk right now.
Nah.
Pepper, give me my booze. You agreed to do this when you became my broodmare. You know, that's what he would say if I was writing Tony Stark.
Ah. I see.
Like a petition Marvel is all I'm saying. But the problem I've always found with Marvel movies was that they're not comfortable with showing the hero in the costume. And I get that they want to focus on the hero as a character and flawed, but at a certain point, you feel like you're not watching a superhero movie anymore.
See, they can't show Thor out of the costume because when they do, he's not wearing a shirt.
Well, that happens in every movie, though, because it's like I've noticed that in the second movie, much like in the first one, there's a scene where he takes off his shirt. And I just got to make a quick a shout out to girls out there about the female fan service thing. I appreciate the Thor movies and the fact that a woman can never say to me, oh, God, you know, it's all these women in spandex outfits. How do you guys watch this? Well, you know what? Thor takes his shirt off in every film, so you got that. So get off my back.
Yeah, seriously, I didn't see Gwyneth Paltrow take her shirt off. Like, that's... like, until I get a topless Gwyneth Paltrow in an Iron Man movie.
Well, all you got was her, like, cheese grater abs in Iron Man 3. Those were still fucking... ah!
Yeah.
I don't know if those were photos. They had to have been photoshopped. She looked bulletproof. But getting to the point at hand, I think I struggle with Marvel movies as superhero films because when, oddly enough, Tom Hiddleston put it best, like the reason why Marvel movies, he likes Marvel movies is that he says that they write the heroes as flawed and they write the villains as heroes. And I'm thinking, well, that's nice, but that's kind of why I have a problem with them.
He just wants to sleep well at night.
I suppose. You know that Tom Hiddleston likes being Loki, but he wants to be a good guy.
Yeah.
He just like, I just want to be nice and be loved by people.
Hey. That's why he keeps doing things in the Loki costume with children.
It's like, at a certain point, that's going to run its course. And like, someone like for like 5 years from now and sees Tom Hiddleston on Hollywood Squares, it's like, that asshole again. You know, because Hollywood Squares is totally still on.
No, it's going to be like Tom Hiddleston as Barney. Hello, children. I am Barney, and I am burdened with glorious purpose to teach you ABCs.
And it is a burden, let me tell you.
Mm. Kneel now, or pull up your little pillows if you'd like to be comfortable.
Now, your parents have told me that they were uncomfortable when I tell you all to kneel.
So I won't be telling you to do it anymore. It will be my friend who I've called in, Terrence Stamp.
Kneel!
Do as he says, children. He's clearly insane.
Come along, children. Kneel before Zod.
Even like the 5-year-olds are being sarcastic at that point. I kneel.
No, seriously. Like Terrence Stamps is like reading the roll call. Sarah, Susan, Bill, kneel.
But going back to 2013, I felt that Iron Man 3 was just sort of the, like, that's when I knew, like, I do not want to see another Marvel movie. Like, it's just like a part of me that's just like, really, it's like, I'm so tired of this.
Oddly enough, I liked Thor 2. And I hate to say, well, I don't really hate to say it. I don't care. I hated Thor 1. Thor 1 had the potential. It's like, we have Kenneth Branagh directing, and we're going to have, like, all this really cool Asgardian, like, Shakespearean storytelling. And then, like, within a half hour of the movie, it's like, he's on Earth, and he's fighting a giant robot.
Yeah, it turned into Masters of the Universe.
Hi, Kat Dennings!
Yeah, really. Like that movie, like the first Thor movie, turned into Masters of the Universe so quick.
Yeah,
it's like I already saw this movie. The guy who played Tom Paris was in it. Like that's all right. Let's just walk away from that one right now. Which is why it is. I'm probably not excited for Guardians of the Galaxy.
I want to see Guardians of the Galaxy, if only because I just want them to... I want to see a movie, a Marvel movie, that isn't fucking Captain America, that isn't Thor, that isn't...
Which is Robert fair, Ryan but I would have rather had, like, I don't know, fucking Power Pack.
Really? You wanted a Power Pack movie?
Just anything but Guardians of the Galaxy, because honestly, like, I know that the stakes are supposed to be high in Galactic and fucking Infinity Gauntlet and all this shit, but you know, like... Okay, it's very clear that they've given up on the Marvel Knights movies. They've just given the fuck up. They're like, yeah, we don't need a fucking Punisher movie. We don't need to do the dark, seedy underbelly of the Marvel Universe. Like, okay, fine, but I don't need fucking Guardians of the Galaxy necessarily. If you need them to facilitate shit going on with the Infinity Gauntlet and then that fucking Thanos is coming, you know, Mr. I'm Not Darkseid, then fine, I guess. But, you've got a fucking wrestler in your cast, which almost never works out well. And I mean, like, come on, Suburban Commando.
You got Benicio Del Toro in there and nobody likes watching him because he looks like a raccoon.
Yeah, and then you've got a raccoon. So,
why isn't Benicio Del Toro playing the raccoon?
And who the fuck is voicing a raccoon? I don't even know.
Is that Gary Shandling? Oh, no, wait, that was that other movie, Over the Hedge. Sorry. Yeah.
But I want to see this movie because this is so far out of Marvel's comfort zone. It's like, what are they going to do? I want to see what they do.
You want to see a movie that's not going to age well? Like a movie that's set in space. That's set in space with alien vistas, which are really going to be fucking green screens in fucking Arizona and shit.
It's going to be fucking Star Wars, the prequels all over again. It's going to be great.
And plus, you know...
How could that possibly go wrong?
The introduction of Star-Lord to audiences was in Avengers EMH. And when Star-Lord shows up, it's the voice of the Master Chief. So how do you follow that?
I don't know, but again... Guardians of the Galaxy is one of the very few movies coming out next year that I'm actually looking forward to. But not because it did something to pique my interest. I don't think the promotional art, as it were, piqued my interest so much as the concept itself. And I want to see how that plays out. But
I just watched the fucking Guardians of the Galaxy episode of Ultimate Spider-Man, and it wasn't that great either. It just wasn't. It's Billy West as Rocket Raccoon, and I'm just not digging it. I'm just not.
Come on along, Rocket Raccoon. Joy, joy, joy.
No, that voice, but he just keeps saying things like, I'm not a raccoon! And he's just like really like flippant and crotchety, and I'm just like, oh my god, I can't take this.
So he's basically being like Tony Soprano as listen here. I'm going to bust your fucking skull in if you don't answer my question in the next 5 seconds.
Yeah.
I can't do Tony Soprano, but...
I think Billy West does a Gandolfini impersonation.
Yeah, he does do that. That's what he's just doing his Gandolfini impression.
So I just can't say that I'm a huge proponent of, like, yes, let's do Guardians of the Galaxy, because there's totally not a million other little movies that we could do in the interim. And, I really think that the problem is that Phase 2 in its entirety is going to suck.
Because all they're doing is loading up for Phase 3.
Yep. They've already said that Coulson's not going to show up anywhere in Phase 2. So that immediately, that is me writing it off as, well, then I don't really need to see anything in Phase 2, do I?
Was Coulson your, like, reason for watching those original movies?
Coulson was the dark horse fucking hero that nobody saw coming, where everybody was like, Coulson's fucking awesome! Put him in the comics! you know, like whether it's because you can throw out like the consultant shorts. What solidified Coulson, at least for me, and I know for a lot of people, was a funny thing happened on the way to Thor's hammer. Like that was like that short where he like stops a robbery and whoops a fucking dude's ass in a convenience store in the middle of New Mexico. It's like amazing. And he does it all while he's waiting for his gas to be pumped. So
was this like a special feature on one of the DVDs?
Yes.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, it's called A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to Thor's Hammer, and you can watch it on YouTube now. They actually released it on YouTube before the DVD came out, which was very, very generous of them, I thought. But they won't release what the new short is, the Mandarin short. You've got to wait to get the Thor 2 DVD for that. Where they're pretty much trying to say that that there really is a Mandarin, that it wasn't the Killian character, that there really is a Mandarin out there.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Let that dead horse stay where it is. God damn it.
Well, they have to have other villains because, you know, because it's not like Ultron's going to be sticking around for a whole shit ton of a while. You know, it's just going to be like, well, so we're not going to use Ant-Man to create Ultron. We're going to use Tony Stark because he destroyed all of his suits, which means that he's going to have some crazy moment where he says, I need to create a better suit and I'm going to use Extremis to do it. And then he's going to accidentally create a sentient suit and that'll be Ultron.
Yeah. And I'm looking at all this happening and I'm thinking, if Marvel held the rights to the Fantastic Four, would they have the balls to make a Fantastic Four movie?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
After what Fox did?
Yeah, because they still need to build the universe.
They would absolutely. They'd be like, we can do this right. We'll get the right people on it, and we'll forget those other movies existed.
Yeah, like if they had their license for Fantastic Four, they would immediately be like, and this is the Baxter Building.
The Baxter Building, because I think they want Doctor Doom somewhere in this universe, but they can't do it.
See, that's a really main problem with all this Infinity Gauntlet shit is that Thanos is gonna fucking come, and
there'll be no Doctor Doom.
There's no Doctor Doom to step to him and be like, "Take your best shot." Like that's what I thought, and walk away. So they're missing out on good comedy there,
and that's and you know Julian McMahon wants his job back.
And he was really good as Dr. Doom. He really genuinely was. Like, you could throw out the rest of the cast of Fantastic Four, but you can give me Julian McMahon as Dr. Doom.
Although there would be this weird fucking moment where Captain America has to talk to the Human Torch.
Yeah.
You... Wow. Oh. Huh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that really is the problem, is that Avi Arad just managed to fuck this up for the next 10 fucking years. When he just decided that the easiest thing to do was to put out all these franchises dressed like whores on a street corner and whoever fucking ponied up could have them.
Hey, baby, you want Marvel tonight?
Hey, but yeah, like seriously. Hey, baby, you want Fantastic Four for 3 movie deal? There you go. You've got an option to renew at the end.
That was... And Fox is not going to be doing anything with the Fantastic Four, so you know that Marvel's just kind of biding its time.
Oh, yeah.
Until they could get their rights back. Because they're not going to try to make another Fantastic Four movie, not after...
Because Marvel has the single best ace in the hole now to get all of these licenses back, and it's called Disney.
It's not called Disney, it's called Disney Legal.
Exactly. It is Disney Legal, where they will, like
we sue elementary schools.
Marvel will walk into the Disney Legal offices and be like, we have a problem. We don't have Fantastic Four, we don't have X-Men, and we don't have Spider-Man. Can you do something? Well, yes, we have Eisner's severed head here that turns people to stone.
Stony-mon!
So let me just walk this over to Paramount. We'll be right back.
Walk this over to Paramount. Sorry. But then I think there's kind of like a barriers here as far as getting a lot of their properties back. It's like Spider-Man's going to take some time. X-Men's going to take a lot of time. But actually, why do you need our help to get Fantastic Four back? Fox is going to give it to you.
Because Fox is a bunch of dicks, and they deserve to have Eisner's head just... paraded through their offices, turning people to stone. Take our franchises, will you? And just like shattering, like right, stone, like just turning people into pillars of salt and stone.
I am tentatively looking forward to Days of Future Past, even though the trailer fucking pissed me off.
Yeah.
I hated that trailer so goddamn much.
The only problem with it is that they were like, hey, Days of Future Past, that's a good movie. That's a good idea for a movie. Yeah, it's this really great story about Kitty Pryde. No, Wolverine.
It's got to be about Wolverine.
But wait, the story was Wolverine. Okay.
And the 2 whole seconds that Anna Paquin was in it are gone now. So because when they were doing the edit, they figured out that that her part was extraneous. They didn't do it for any malicious reason. They were just like, well, Rogue just doesn't, like, Anna did a great job, but Rogue doesn't really fit anywhere into this version of the edit, so we just need to...
So it's not that Marvel's trying to... That's not that they're trying to... Because it's Fox that's doing it, right? It's not that Fox is trying to distance themselves from Anna Paquin or anything. Well, we wrote you a small part because we figured, well, no, you know, we're actually going to cut it. You know what? Go blow vampires in Louisiana. Leave us alone. You've already ruined your image for us.
Yeah, I hated the trailer because it was just Inception.
Yeah, well, all trailers are Inception now.
Because, well, this even painfully so.
See, the thing is that it's that I'm glad that you're here, Bill. It's Bill that famously said, "I'm tired of movie trailers because they're not bothering with voiceover anymore. It's just the goddamn Inception horn." But now it's not the Inception horn anymore. Now it's that effect that they use whenever it is that a grenade goes off in a war movie, where it's, and then all you hear is the tinnitus. Like, that's all they do now. So they just do the tinnitus.
And then, like, maybe, like, a slight heartbeat in the sound, and then rapid cuts of people screaming at each other.
Yeah.
So, like, we are literally living in a Pablo Francisco trailer parody world.
Seriously.
No!
Because that's what they did for the Space Dicks movie. Prometheus.
Yeah. Oh no, Prometheus. It's Prometheus.
Yeah. So that's what they did for the Space Dicks movie. And it was the tinnitus sound and a lot of and then so but I can't remember what other movie I just
But see, the thing is that with the tinnitus heartbeat thing, you have to go back and look at Ridley Scott's original Alien movie.
Yeah.
Where it was like, whatever, it was like a... And it was like, you know, they kept cutting
And they did that at the end of the Prometheus trailer. But now everybody's doing the tinnitus grenade went off heartbeat thing. So now there's this fight between the elephant horn and tinnitus grenade, where there's legit voiceover guys like James Arnold Taylor that are just sitting around going like, I guess I just don't have to do movie trailers anymore. I'll just go talk about Family Guy for 30 seconds, I guess.
I got to learn how to blow the elephant horn. I think that's that's how I'm going to... Was that a euphemism? I don't know.
Voiceover people of tomorrow, forget voice training. Go ahead and start learning how to play an elephant horn, because that is where movie trailers are going. That is where they're staying. Otherwise, learn how to make the tinnitus sound. Sure, that's just a synth noise, but who knows? I mean, maybe you could be like Dee Bradley Baker and just be able to make that noise all by yourself convincingly.
Michael Winslow, you have work now, too!
Seriously, like, this new trailer landscape is perfect for Michael Winslow.
A rogue cop.
Oh, whoa!
Get in the car!
And I can't let this podcast end without also bringing up the other two movies that I'm looking forward to. Tentatively, I'm looking forward to Sin City, A Dame to Kill For. Tentatively.
Just show me a trailer.
Show me a trailer before you show me anything.
That's a poster. A poster is not enough for me to get excited.
Well, wait a minute. Yeah. Did you guys like the first one?
I did.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, then, yeah.
But still, show me it. Like, but it's been how long since the original Sin City?
How
crazy is Frank Miller? He gets exponentially crazy as the years go on, where he seriously puts a fork in his ear, twists it around for a while, And then whatever he pulls out is his dinner for that night.
Digging so. For an idea.
I think you just described a Ren and Stimpy joke. I'm tentatively looking forward to it because a lot of the same people are behind it, and that's great, but I'm holding it back because a lot of the same people are behind it. So,
yeah, and
also it's a prequel. Well, some of the stories are prequels. So, and I've kind of gone on great length about my feelings of prequels in general. So I'm just going to leave that where it is and just saying, I'm looking forward to it, but this could go wrong so fast.
Yeah. And what's the other movie?
And the last movie, oddly enough, I found myself unable to... you may laugh. You're going to laugh. I'm pretty sure you're going to laugh, but I'm actually looking forward to the Lego movie.
No, I'm not laughing at you.
I'm not laughing.
That has potential. I mean, it's
yeah.
It Lego has brilliantly figured out a way to put, like, every friggin' franchise into a movie. It's like a YouTube video that actually got legit, like, money to be made into a film.
I know, it's weird. And plus, we're going to get my favorite form of Batman ever, the douche Batman.
Yeah, he is pretty douchey in Lego, isn't he?
Yeah. And plus, Will Arnett, I'm not going to lie, Will Arnett does do a good Batman voice.
Yeah, well, yeah, because that's the only voice he does. I don't know how to break that to anybody. It's like, I feel bad for anybody that has to cast Arnett as anything and be like, hey, can you do anything else? No, of course not. Why would you even ask me that? I just want to tell like how many cigarettes have you smoked today? None. I just sound like this.
It's like asking Tony J, hey, can you lighten up your octave a bit?
No.
Never.
Never, dear boy.
All of a sudden, Tony J is fucking Tim Curry. Mm. How about that?
Oh, my God.
Well, you guys chimed in about all sorts of comic book movies, but you didn't say what you thought about Winter Soldier.
Oh.
You know, it looks good.
Yeah. I mean, did you like the first Captain America, anybody?
I did. I loved it. I love good period films like that. And I liked Tommy Lee Jones in it. I liked Chris Evans in it. I liked... Why do I keep forgetting Agent Smith's name? Hugo Weaving. Yeah, I liked Hugo Weaving in it. I keep blanking on his name, and I don't know why. I think his name is getting edged out by Hugh Jackman and Hugh Laurie.
Hugh Jackman, thankfully, wasn't in the Captain America movie.
What? That was a lot of crowd
back there.
What he could have been. Yes.
My problem with the Winter Soldier is that a lot of elements of the first Captain America movie that I liked aren't going to be in the sequel because, well, outside of a time paradox, how the fuck is Tommy Lee Jones going to be in the movie?
Mm.
Yeah, but I'm definitely going to like the idea of Cap having to deal with the modern United States government, how it's all cloak and dagger and you know, like diplomacy and politics and how he's a piece on the board.
Well, didn't we already see that with Skyfall?
Yeah, but some people didn't like Skyfall, and I think that at the very least there's some levity in the sense that it's Captain America. You know,
yeah.
Skyfall, it was all serious and fucking like oh, wait, let's have the shootout at Skyfall. Like, great, awesome, that's fantastic.
Yeah. I'll tell you this about Skyfall. You know, my mom doesn't go to see any movies, never likes a single movie. She liked Skyfall. And that blew me away. It's like, what? You watched Skyfall? It's like, yeah. You liked it? Yeah.
I liked it, but, you know, that movie does kind of grab you by the throat and doesn't let go. And not in a good way. Not in a good way. You're like, oh my God, this ride is amazing! It's like, no. Like,
can you just tell me when it's over?
Just tell me when it's over! This is exciting and everything, but I'd like to breathe! Oh my God!
Oh God! You just sound like a fat old man.
Oh
God! I need the butter.
He's crying.
Oh please! Where's the butter? I need my butter.
More butter! More butter! Seriously, though, I like the idea of Cap having to deal with the fact that he's a piece, that he's not, you know, that he's not the player anymore, that the militaries aren't small, that the hierarchies, you know, that the ladder for the hierarchy isn't a mile fucking high, and that he also has to deal with fucking Bucky. So that's gonna be fun.
That wasn't gonna go on my list of movies that already suck, obviously, but there was just too many unknowns as far as I'm concerned about how I'm gonna Winter Soldier is going to play off of me. So I'm just saying, like, I won't see it in theaters, but I'll probably see it. I'll probably see it regardless. But I know that sounds very.
I tell you to see it in theaters because there's no way you can really make a bad Captain America movie and Cap beats up a bunch of guys. Awesome performance.
I'm sorry, but they made three bad Captain America movies.
I'm talking about with contemporary writing and people who actually know what they're doing and people who can afford guys who aren't Reb Brown.
I was about to say, do you think Reb Brown didn't know what he was doing?
Yeah, fucking Reb Brown didn't know what he was doing. Are you fucking kidding me? He was just another fucking meat grindy actor. That's it. It's just like so, you guy standing on the corner dressed like Captain America, because that's really what it was, is that Reb Brown was just like signing autographs and taking pictures in the Captain America costume, and they was like, well, he's already got the costume, we may as well put him in the movie.
Like, if that was the costume they wound up going with in the movie, no wonder it looked like shit.
Doesn't it look like just a guy who, like, came from some cornpone town, went to Hollywood to make his fortune, and then he found out that the easiest way to make money was to just take pictures and sign autographs as Captain America, so he went and got himself a motorcycle helmet, painted an A on it.
I think that guy's... Isn't he currently signing autographs in Times Square? He stands next to the naked cowboy in Elmo.
Let's make a movie about him. We'll call it Captain America. You know, coincidentally, that there happens to be a comic book character by the name of Captain America. But it's a no relation of that character.
Captain America, Elmo, and the naked cowboy. The new Avengers.
So on that bombshell, I think it's time for us to bring us on home, Mark. Do the honors.
Hold on, I gotta knock the rust off. It's been a while since I did this. Hold on, dramatic effect. Oh, wait, hold on. Actually, before we do end, Bill, say your goodbyes.
Hi, goodbye. I'm Bill. Thanks for listening.
Plug your Twitter.
Oh, sorry. Yes, people can follow me at Bill's Voice. And if you search for Bill's Voice on Facebook, I also have a very cool fan page. And I'll keep you updated as to conventions and projects and all sorts of fun stuff.
All right. And we're going to put Bill's information for Twitter and Facebook in the ending posts.
Aw, you're so sweet.
On the website.
What a guy.
Outro music is always provided by Zero Reynolds. You can follow him on Twitter at Zer Jester. That's XER Jester. You can now take Super Toolshed wherever you go. Just go to benthesage.com/supertoolshed. For Ben the Sage and Bill Rogers, I'm Mark the Engineer. Until next we beat, the shed is shut.